We are holding on Nun Bays Amr Aleph, fourth line. It says Amr Rami Bachoma. Hare Omru Shavas Yeshle Dalet Amis. Now we know we've talked about all this time where when a person we've been talking about the whole issue of shvi, of how a person is Kona Shvisa, how a person makes his spot that's his base for Eruv Tchumen. Does he do it with food? Does he do it on foot? We discussed yesterday, according to Rav Nachman, that actually is a machlokes between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, which one is the primary one. So Rami Bachama says like this: we know that if a person is Kona Shvisa on foot, then Yeshle Dalet Amos. Then he has four Amos, meaning, in other words, what we say is, in effect, he has 2,004 Amos to work with. He has four Amos that is his Mokum Shvisa. We had in the Mishnah the example where he says, my Mokum Shvisa is by the trunk of the tree, and that's considered a defined place as long as the trunk itself is not wider than seven Amos, so that you have some part of his four Amos is defined regardless. Plus, he has 2,000 Amos beyond that. Rami Bachama asks the question, what about a person who puts down food for his Eruv Tchumen? Does he have four Amos around that spot or not? Same idea. Does he have 2,004 Amos to work with, or only 2,000? Amar Rava Toshma. So Rava says you should be able to prove it from our Mishnah. We said at the end of the Mishnah, Loi Omru Ma'arvin Bapas Ela Lahakal Ala Asher. The reason why we said we said that the reason why the Chachamim established the concept of making an Eruv with bread or other kind of food, Elala Hokal Ala Asher, was only in order to make a kula for a rich person. Again, we said rich and poor in the Gemara before, and also in the Gemara that we're going to discuss today, doesn't necessarily mean literally rich and poor. Primarily, poor means that the person is on the road away from home, and on his way home, basically. And Asher means that he's at home or possibly very close to home, whatever. So the Mishnah had said that the reason why the Chachamim made the Takana of being Ma'ariv Pas was only to make a kula for the Osher, so the Yetziv Ya'ariv Beraglov, so he doesn't have to go and make an Eruv on foot. We discussed yesterday, is that line only according to the Yehuda, or maybe is it both according to the Nachman's understanding that was only according to the Yehuda? Because Rav Meir had said that the only one who was able to make an Eruv on foot is an Oni, so according to him, there's no kula for an Osher at all. According to Rav Chista's understanding, we said it could work according to both, because even Rav Meir would agree that there's a case where an Osher can make an Eruv on foot. Anyway, says Rava, v'yamit einloy, if you're going to tell me that a person who puts down an Eruv tchumen of food does not have the extra four Amos, hai lahakel, what do you mean? It's only lahakel lahachmehu. Then it comes out, you have a chumra by putting down food. If he had been there in person, ma'arev beraglov, he would have had four Amos plus 2,000. Like this with food, he only has 2,000, so it comes out as a chumra. And the Mishnah is saying that the purpose of an eruv of food is to create a kula. So wouldn't that show that he has the four amos? The Gemara says that's not necessarily a valid proof. Nevertheless, you could say that the kula is that it's better for him, it's easier for him. This way he doesn't have to schlep out there, and this way he doesn't have to go to the tircha of schlepping out there in person in order to put down the eruv food, in order to be ma'arav beraglav. He's just able to send the eruv food with a shliach or something. So it could be, yes, maybe there is a chumra in it, but the Mishnah is not addressing that chumra, because compared to the fact that he has the kula of not having to walk out there, the slight chumra that he loses four amos is not really doesn't really matter that much that we should say that he doesn't have it. So the Gemara leaves it unresolved over here. But the fact is, earlier in the third perek, when we were discussing the various dinim, we had the various cases where a person puts down his eruv, and we had cases where it's on the branch of a tree, or where it rolled away an amma or two or whatever. Where we made it pretty clear over there that a person does have four amas out around his eruv, and therefore that is the final halacha. So even though in the Gemara over here, Rava's attempted proof of it is is shown that it's not necessarily a valid proof, but in that other Gemara back on Daf Lamed Beis Lamed Gimel, we had Rava saying, taking it as a given, that you always have four amos around your Eruv food, and that therefore is the halacha. Mishnah says, Mishi yotza leilach be'ir shema arvin bar. If a person left before Shabbos to go to a different city where there's an Eruv. In other words, again, the other city is within 4,000 amas of the city where he lives. And his friend made him go back. For example, as we're going to see in the Gemara, his friend told him, don't bother, it's too hot, it's too cold, or whatever. The result is that on Shabbos itself, he is able to go to that other city, but all the other people in his city are not able to go. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Now we're going to explain in a second what's going on over here. We touched on it a bit in the Gemara yesterday. We said that this Mishnah works out better according to Rav Nachman's understanding. But we'll see what it means. You actually have two explanations in Rashi that affect the meaning of the Mishnah and of the entire Sugya. Rav Meir says, no, kol shu yochal arav v'lay eruv, if he was able, in this situation, if he was able to make an eruv, and he didn't actually make the eruv, hareza chamor gamol, then he's in the chamor gamol situation that we've discussed before, meaning that he's stuck in the middle, he loses the tchum on the far side, and also he loses some on the near side. All he can do is walk only 2,000 amos from his house to the end of the tchum. He can't go anything further on the other side of his house because what's Rav Meir's suffix, and what does Rav Yehuda mean that he's allowed to go and everybody else is not allowed to go? So Rashi's first explanation, which he first gave in the previous sugya when we mentioned in connection with Rav Nachman, and he also goes on to explain it in On Mishnah at the beginning of the Gemara, is basically like this. When we say that his friend made him go back, it means that, like we said, that his friend told him, you know what, don't bother, it's too hot, it's too cold, or whatever. The point is, therefore, that he never actually said, I want to be Kona Shvisa in this other place. But as the Gemara is going to tell us, as we mentioned before in the Gemara, and as the Gemara is going to tell us over here, we're talking about that he actually has a house in the other city as well. So therefore, even though he turned back, we still say that he wasn't, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that he wasn't oiker das. He didn't totally change his mind. He still does intend to be Kona Shvisa in the spot where he planned to. So therefore, now the point is also though that he did start going on the road. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda considers him an oni. And we learned yesterday that Rabbi Yehuda says, according to Rabbi Nachman's understanding anyway, that An oni is able to be kona shvisa b'makom ploni at a distance by saying, or in this case thinking, that he's going to be kona shvisa over there. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda would consider. So that's what Rabbi Yehuda means. Therefore, according to this explanation, that when he says that he's able to go to that city the next day and everybody else is not, he's considered an oni because he actually set out on the road. And the fact that he didn't say I intend to be Kona Shvisa doesn't matter, as long as we say that he turned back because the other person told him don't bother going. Whereas if he had turned back on his own, then Rabbi Yehuda would say that, yeah, I mean, the fact that he turned back on his own without anybody telling him would imply, therefore, they changed his mind and decided to be Kona Shvisa at his house in his city, after all, rather than on the road between the two cities. So that's why Rabbi Yehuda says that he's Kona Shvisa at the other place, and therefore he's able to go there the next place. Meanwhile, Rabbi Meir would have a suffix. The fact is, on the one hand, he left to go to this other city where he has a house. On the other hand, the fact is he did turn around because his friend told him. So according to Rashi's first explanation, we would say like this. Rabbi Meir would say, yeah, I agree with you that he's an oni because he did set out on the road, but the fact is, he didn't say anything. He didn't say, I want to be Kona Shvisa over there. So now you have a suffix. What is it? Does he, does he have his makom shvisa at home, or does he have his makom shvisa at that other place? So therefore, the result is, Rav Meir would say that he's a chamor gamol, and he ends up only having the area between his house and the end of the tchum in that direction, but nothing further in that direction, and nothing back beyond his house. That's all Rashi's first explanation, and then we'll see in the Gemara there's going to be more detail. There's going to be more detail on that. There's going to be a third opinion in the Gemara of Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, and there's going to be a machlokas of Rabbi Yosef and of Rabba and Rabbi Yosef what exactly the scenario is. So that's going to be further details all according to that first explanation of Rashi. And Rashi further down on the Amud gives a different explanation Rashi points out a number of problems with this explanation. So Rashi ends up saying a different explanation, which he prefers, and most of the Rishonim also say that this is the correct explanation. Is that so? Again, we're talking about Hachzirei Chaveroi, but we're talking about he did actually say that. I plan to have my makom shvisa over there. So Rabbi Yehuda is saying that's good. He said shvisasi b'makom ploini. And he left on the road, so therefore he's good. That is his makom shvisa. Reb Meir, meanwhile, is arguing only because he says that when do you consider it? When do you consider him an ani? When do you consider him an ani? Only if he actually went on the road, and only if he's on the road on the way home. Over here, where he's going from one house of his to the other, then Rav Meir would say not necessarily is he considered an ani. He'd be considered an osher, and again, we learned in the previous Gemara that Rav Nachman at least had understood that Rav Meir was saying that an osher cannot be ma'ariv, can't make an eruv tumen at a distance unless he uses food for the purpose. So that's Rashi's second explanation. So the Gemara starts off, Maishna Ihu or Maishna Inhu. What's the difference? Why are we saying that he is able to walk to the next city and they are not? So Rav Huna says the case that the Mishnah is talking about, suppose that he has two houses, one in this city, one in the other city, between those two houses are two Tchumei Shabbos, 4,000 Amos, or obviously it doesn't have to be that there's exactly 4,000 Amos. It could be that there's 3,000, it could be that there's 2,100, whatever. The point is, it's more than 2,000 Amos, such that he needs an aid of Tchumen to get from one to the other. So what happens? So as far as he is concerned, once he left to go on the road to the other one, then he's considered for that purpose an oni, because he left it, because he's on his way to his other house. Whereas everybody else in town who doesn't have a house in the other city are considered ashirim. Yeah, I've actually a bit of a machlokas Rishonim. Does it literally mean that he has to have, and it also depends on the two Lashonis and Rashi over here, does it literally mean that he has to have a house in the other city? Or are we just talking about the usual way, is why would a person be going to the other city? Because he has a house there and he plans to spend Shabbos over there, but the same principle would apply if he's going to be a guest by somebody's house. So does it dafka mean that he actually has another house over there, and therefore we can say he's on his way to his house, and therefore he can be considered an ani? The Gemara says Tanya Nami Hachi. We learn similarly in a Braisa. A Braisa says Mishiyash the Shnei Batim. A person has two houses, or Menen Shnei Tchumei Shabbos. Between the two houses is two Tchumei Shabbos. Again, meaning not necessarily two full Tchumen, but more than one Tchum. Kiven Shehechsik Baderach. So once he established that he's going on the road, once he set out on the road, Kona Eruv. At that point, he's Kona. The Eruv at the point where he said, so again, according to Rashi's first explanation, even if he didn't say Shvisasi B'Seif HaTchum, he didn't actually say that my Makom Shvisa is going to be there, but once he already set out on the road, then that's good enough to make his Makom Shvisa. According to Rashi's second explanation, we would say he Dafka had to have said it. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, this is what Rabbi Yehuda says. And the Braisa continues, Yeser Arkein Omer Rabbi Yossi B'Yehuda. Furthermore than that, Rabbi Yossi B'Yehuda says, and we're going to see soon what Rabbi Yossi B'Yehuda is adding. We're going to see soon what he's adding to what his father Rabbi Yehuda says. But Rabbi Yossi B'Yehuda furthermore says, Afilo Motzei Chaveri, even if his friend met up with him while he was on his way out there, but Amaloi, and he says to him, Linpoi, stay over here overnight. Don't bother going all the way to the end of the Tchum. It's hot out, it's cold out, so it's too much of a bother. Nevertheless, the Macha Mashkin Baholich, the next day he's able to get up early and go to the other city, to his house in the other city. So according to Rashi's first explanation, what it means is even if he didn't actually leave, he was going to leave, and then his friend told him, you know what, don't bother. According to Rashi's second explanation, we would say that Rabbi Yehuda would be saying at least you had to have said Shvisasi b'mekaymi. And Rabbi Yosi b'Yehuda is saying that you have to have left on the road. So what's the machlok? This Amar Rabba, Loimar Kula Amalei Pligi Ditzarech. So Rabba says, as far as saying, everybody agrees that he needs to say. Which means that, according to Rashi's first explanation, it means the other person has to have said to him, don't bother going. Rabba would say, both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, would agree with that concept that the other person has to have told him, don't bother going. Because if not, if he just turned around on his own, then we would say at that point he canceled his original plan and he doesn't plan to go there after all and he doesn't have his makom shvisa over there. So Loimar over here, according to that first explanation, would be that the friend had to have told him, don't bother going. According to the second explanation, Loimar would mean that he himself has to have said, I intend to be Kona Shvisa over there. Ki pligi lahachsit. Rabbi says, the machloikus would be, does he actually have to have set out on the road? So that's the machlokas according to Rabba. Rabbi Yehuda would say there has to be loimar and hechzik. There has to be both. That his friend told him that they started going on the road, and his friend told him don't bother going. And Rabbi Yehuda would say it would be enough even according to the first explanation, even if he didn't actually go yet. According to the first explanation, Rabbi would say everybody agrees that the friend has to have told him don't bother going. The machloikus would be, does he actually have to have set out or not? Rabbi Yehuda would say he has to have set out. Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda would say he doesn't have to have set out. According to the second explanation of Rashi, you would say that They would both agree that he has to have said, I want to be Kodesh Shvis over there, and the question would be, does he actually have to have set out or not? That's according to Rabba. Rabbi Yosef says the other way around. Everybody agrees he has to have set out on the road. Ki pligi loimar. The question would be, does there have to have been any saying? Does his friend actually have told him, according to Rabbi Yehuda, not necessarily, even if he just turned around on his own, we would still say he was Kona Shvisa over there, because to begin with, he said that he was Kona Shvisa, according to Rabbi Yosef, we would say that once he set out on the road, then for sure we would say whether his friend made him go back or whether he went back on his own, Rabbi Yehuda would say it doesn't matter. Either way, he still has his makom shvisa. And Rabbi Yehuda would be machmir and say that no, you have to have also that there was loimar, that his friend actually told him, or in the second lashon that he himself actually said, I want to be Kona Shvisa. So it's a little bit complicated because, again, you have all these different moving parts over here. You have Rabbi Yehuda versus Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, and we haven't even gotten that much into Rabbi Meir. The Gemara is going to get into him soon. And then you have Rabba and Rabbi Yosef, and then on top of that, you have Rashi's two explanations of how to understand the sugya. So it is a little bit complicated to follow all the moving parts. Okay, the Gemara says, Kaman Ozla Hoda Oma Ola. Now, what about which opinion would, which according to which opinion would be this that Ola says, that Misha Hechsik Baderech Vechzirech Chaveroi, if a person set out on the road to go to this other city, again, this other city where Rav Huna said he has another house, Vechzirech Chaveroi, and his friend told him, don't bother going, Harehu Muchser Umuchsak. Then he's returned, but he also has the chazakah of, he also has the chazakah that he, it is still considered that he set out on the road, and therefore that he has his makom shvisa over there. So first, before we describe which of the opinions we said before, that would be like, first we have to figure out just a point to understand what the words that Ula is saying. What does he mean, muhsar or muhsar? I muhsar lama muhsak, vi muhsak lama muhsar. What do you mean? Muchzer implies that he's considered to be returned. In other words, that he goes back to having his tum as if he was at home. Muchzak implies that he was machzik baderech, that he's considered, he's on the road. He's on, he's considered to have a chazakah of going on the road, and therefore that he has his tum at 2,000 amos away from his house, or whatever distance from his house like he wanted. So why are we using the expression muchzer or muchzak? They seem to contradict each other. The Gemara says, you're right, Hachi Kamar, what Ula means is, Afal Pisha Muchzer Muchzer. Right, what Ula means is, even though he was Muchzer, even though he actually did return home, nevertheless, he's considered Muchzer, he's considered as though he actually went on the way. So now that we understand Ula to be saying that way, that, so again, the scenario is that he left on the way, his friend told him, go back. So we say he still has his makom shvisa at a distance. Kiman k'Rav Yosef al libed Rav Yosef b'Yehuda. Specifically, then that would be according to Rav Yosef's understanding of Rav Yosef b'Yehuda. We said Rav Yosef had said that everybody agrees that you need lahachzik. The question is, do you need loymar as well? Rav Yosef of Yehuda had mentioned afilu mitzoy chaveri, even if his friend found him and told him, turn around, don't bother going. So that would mean, in other words, Rav Yosef of Yehuda would require both hechzik and loymar. In other words, Tosfos points out that Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda used the word in his expression. He said afilu, even if mitzoy chaveroi, and he told him to stay over here. Rabbi would understand that you actually need the friend to say that you need the friend to say don't bother because it's cold or whatever. So this is Tosfos explaining according to Rashi's first explanation that, again, that we say that the loymar over here is talking about whether his friend said or not. So if his friend actually tells him don't go because it's cold or because it's hot, then it would be considered according to Rabbah that's good enough. Nevertheless, since he didn't go back of his own volition, he only went back because his friend convinced him to, then he still has the eruv. As opposed to Ula just mentioned Vechzire Chaveri without specifying why his friend told him to go back, so then that couldn't work according to Rabbah. It could only work according to Rabbi Yosef's understanding that Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda requires that his friend tells him. But it doesn't necessarily mean that he has to tell him dafka because of hot or because of heat or cold. It could just be that he tells him for any other reason. That's according to the first explanation. According to the second explanation, we would say that Rabbi Yosef Yehuda would be machmir over Rabbi Yehuda. In the first explanation, Rabbi Yosef Yehuda is mekel. In the second one, he's machmir and saying you need to be both. He needs to be both. When Ula says he doesn't need to say Shvisasi b'makom ploini, you do need though that he left on the road you do need that he left on the road, and also that his friend told him to go back. You don't need the third factor that he said anything, as opposed to then Rashi says according to that. If we understand it that way, it doesn't mean Dafka has to be according to Rabbi Yosef. Actually Rabbah's understanding of Rabbi Yehuda it could be according to Rabbah's understanding of Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Yosef's understanding of Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda. And then again, according to the two Lashonis, then we have to deal with what Reb Meir says, where he says, Harei Zeh Chamor Gamol. So again, according to the first explanation, the reason why Reb Meir says he's a Chamor Gamol is because since he could have said, because in the first Lashon, he never said, Shvisasi B'makom Ploini. So we don't know, so we have a suffix, did he intend to be Kona Shvisa back at home or in the place that he originally thought of? So therefore, he's a Chamor Gamol. In the second explanation, the reason why Reb Meir would say that he's a Chamor Gamol is because Reb Meir considers him to be an Osher, because even though he left on the road, the fact that he's still fairly close to his house when his friend told him to go back still makes him considered to be an Osher. And we learned before, Reb Meir says an Osher can't make an Eruv at a distance without food. Anyway, so we talked about, in the sugya, we talked about Hechsik Baderech, where he left to go on the road. So how far is considered, how far does he have to go for it to be considered Hechsik Baderech? So the Gemara says, Rav Yehuda bar Ishtisa, Aisle Kakola de Peri, Lodom Nasin bar Oshia. Rav Yehuda bar Ishtisa brought a basket of fruit to Rav Nasin bar Oshia on Erev Shabbos. Ki have a ozil, or maybe he brought it on Shabbos from some place where he was able to carry, whatever it is. The point is that he was going to be leaving and to go back home on Shabbos. And again, his house was more than 2,000, but less than 4,000 amos away. So ki have a ozil, when Rabbi Yehuda bar Ishtisa was getting ready to leave, Shavke adnochis darga. So he's going to leave Friday night. That's what it is. He was going to leave Friday night. So when he was about, not Friday at night, actually, but Friday afternoon, because he was going to go to be Machzik Baderech. So when Rav Nosson Bar Oshia was about to leave, Shavke, so Rav Nosson Bar Oshia let him go, Ad Nochis Dauga, until he went down a step from the, they were up on the second floor of a house, so he started going down the steps, or actually the Rambam learns a little differently, that he went all the way down the steps, whatever. Omale Bishocha, then Rav Nosson Bar Oshia told him, don't bother, stay over here overnight. Lamacha called him Ba'azel, and the next day, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ishta was able to get up early in the morning and leave. In other words, we have this case. He was Hechsik Baderech. His friend told him, go back, and everything was good. Again, Kiman Kereb Yosef Alibi Dereb Yosef Abihoda. Again, should we say that this is only according to Rabbi Yosef, according to Rabbi Yosef's understanding of Rabbi Yosef Abihoda? And the problem, because again, according to him, because here we have, on the surface, we don't have in the story where Rabbi Yehuda bar Ishtisa said, I want to be Kona Shvisa at this and this place. So all we have over here is he went on the road and his friend, namely Rav Nosson bar Oshia, told him to go back. It seems like that was good enough. So that would be according to Rabbi Yosef's understanding of Rabbi Yosef Yehuda. The problem with that is, Rashi says, is that usually when we have a machlokas Rabba and Rabbi Yosef, usually the halacha is like Rabba. The answer is, the Gemara says, Loi, k'rabba ba'al libid Rabbi Yehuda. No, we can answer instead, we can say that it worked according to Rabba's understanding of Rabbi Yehuda. So again, we would say then that, if we go according to, Rashi says then that what we do is like this. If we said, again, he was machzik baderech, but he didn't say anything. So therefore, that could only work according to Rabbi Yosef's understanding of Rabbi Yosef Yehuda. The answer is he did actually say, I want to be Kodesh Visa. We didn't mention it in the story, but nevertheless, that's how it was that he actually did say, I want to be Kodesh Visa. And therefore, that could work according to Rabbah's understanding of Rabbi Yehuda, that once he said, I want to be Koine Shemissa, then and he was Machzik Baderech. The fact that he started going down the stairs or went all the way down the stairs or whatever is enough to be Machzik Baderech and to say that he was Koine Shemissa, and that would be good enough. That would result in, that would work out according to Rabbah, and that, so Rashi explains, the good of that is that the halacha is like Rabbah. Now, that's according to Rashi. Many other Rishonim learn instead over here that since the Gemara started with the assumption that it is according to Rabbi Yosef, Al-Libad Rabbi Yosef Yehuda, and we also said on Amar Aleph the same thing according to Ulla, we said that Ulla's statement also, so many of the Rishonim learn, and this is how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that the Halacha actually is indeed like Rabbi Yosef, Al-Libad Rabbi Yosef Yehuda. Namely, that as long as he set out on the road intending to be Koine Shemissa over there, even though he didn't say anything, and his friend told him, don't bother, come back, nevertheless he is Koine Shemissa at that point, and therefore he's allowed to go there, and from there the next day. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Reb Meir Omer Kol Sheyochel La'arev Chola. We said in the Mishnah that a mayor says, in a case like this, where he could have made an Eruv and he didn't, then he's a Chamor Gamol. One point Rashi makes on Amar Aleph when he's dealing with the two explanations is, what's the expression over here? Kol She'eni Yochol. What's the kol Mishe'eni Yochol Arev? According to the first explanation, it's only in this one case because we have the suffix of whether his intention without saying so to be Koine Shemissa or not was good. As opposed to, according to the second Lashon, in general, Rav Meir is arguing and saying that, and in general, Rav Meir is saying that any person who is an Osher and says Shvi Sasi B'Makom Pliny, then Rav Meir says, well, do we consider him an Osher or do we consider him an Ani? And therefore, the result is that he's a Chamor Gamol. So the question is, the Gemara says, Hotanena Chada Zimna, why does Rav Meir have to say it over here? We already learned previously in the third parak that we had over there a suffix. We had a case over there where, for example, the Eruv rolled outside the Tchum or was burnt or whatever, and we don't know whether it happened during the day or on Friday or Bein HaShemashes or after Shabbos began. So we said that there's a suffix over there, and Rameir and Rabbi Yehuda there agreed also that he's a Chamor Gamol. Now, in our Mishnah also, it's a suffix. So according to the first Lashon and Rashi, the point is that case is a suffix. This case is a suffix. So we already know that Meir considers him a Chamor Gamol in the case of a suffix. Why repeat it over here? According to the second Lashon, we know already that Rav Meir says that if you made an improper Eruv, such as in that case, where it's outside the Tchum and it's improper because you can't reach it before Shabbos, then you're a Chamor Gamol. So in our Mishnah, it's the same kind of thing. He made an Eruv as an Osher where he's not supposed to, because as an Osher, he's supposed to make an Eruv with food. So why does Rav Meir need to repeat it over here? Now, actually, I mean, Tosfos points out just the opposite. I mean, we would say that, here we have much more detail. We wouldn't know, if we didn't say so, we wouldn't know that in our Mishnah, he considers him a Chamor Gamol, because this is a much more complicated case than the other where the Eruv rolled outside the Tchum or whatever. Okay, but Tosfos says the point is that the Mishnah didn't have to use the word Chamor Gamol over here. The Mishnah could have said it's a suffix, and automatically, once it's a suffix, then we can refer back to there and know what Rav Meir says in the case of a suffix. Mind you, I mean, the fact that Tosfos mentions that it's a suffix, actually, I mean, that's according to Rashi's first explanation. They already explained, that seems to be according to Rashi's first explanation. They already previously explained that they prefer Rashi's second explanation, that it's not a matter of suffix, it's a matter of, as an Osher, he's not supposed to do this. So Marsha explains that what Tosfos means is even if it was a matter of a suffix, even if it was not that Rav Meir considers him to be an Osher, he says the suffix, whether he's an Oni or an Osher, then we would say he's a Chamor Gamol. If we knew for sure that, in other words, according to the second explanation, there's still an element of suffix over here. Do we actually consider him to be an Oni since he left to go on the road, or do we consider him an Osher since he's not really that far away from his house and he has the house in the other city and so forth? As opposed to, Maharsha says, what Tosfos means is, if we knew for a fact that he was an Osher, then we would say, then there's no Macholikus, then Rameyer would agree he's not a Cham or Gamel, he just has his original Tum. Anyway, so again, getting back to the Gemara, the question is, why do we need to repeat over here the words Cham or Gamel? Amar of Sheshes, Loi Tema Taimeter Meir Suffolk Erev Suffolk Le Erev Hu Da'aver Cham or Gamel, because, like this, the reason why it needs to say it in our Mishnah again, because don't think to say that Reb Meir's reason to call him a Cham or Gamel is only because there's a Suffolk whether he made an Erev or not, as in that case, where we don't know whether the Erev food was valid or in the right place or whatever, Bein Ashmoshes or not. But then you would say that if he definitely didn't make an Eruv, then you would not consider him a Cham or Gamel. Says Rav Sheshes, the point of our Mishnah is, Elaf people vade le Eruv have a Cham or Gamel. Even if he definitely did not make an Eruv, because in the first Lashon he didn't say, I want my Mokum Shvisa over there, but on the other hand, he demonstrated that he wants to by starting to walk there, or according to the second explanation, that he's an usher, that he's an usher because the fact is he did start going and show, again, he showed Kavana that he doesn't want to have the tchum of his original house anymore. So even in that case, have a Cham or Gamel. Because after all, that's the case in our Mishnah. He definitely did not make an Eruv, because he definitely did not say in the first Lashon, I want to be Konishvis over there. Or in the second Lashon, he is an usher and has no right to make an Eruv on foot. And nevertheless, Reb Meir considers him a Cham or Gamel, because the fact that he left to go on the way and thereby demonstrated that he doesn't want his original Tchum anymore is enough for Reb Meir to say, therefore, that he loses his Tchum on the other side of his house. And then on the other hand, the fact is that he didn't actually reach that, according to the first Lashon, because he didn't actually reach there, he turned around, or according to the second Lashon, because he may be an Osher, then we would say, therefore, he doesn't for sure have the other Tchum either, and therefore he winds up being a Cham or Gamel. Okay. Mishnah says, Misha Yotza Chutz L'Tchum. If a person went outside the Tchum, and we're talking about the Mezid, he knew that it's outside, he knew it's outside the Tchum, so we're not talking about like at the beginning of the Perek where Goyim took him out of the city. We're not talking about like we had in the middle of the Perek where he went out for a Dvar Mitzvah in order to save people's lives or whatever. We're talking about he deliberately walked outside the Tchum. Afilu ama achas lo yukonis. And we also, it's also not the case like we had previously in the Perek involving Rav Nechemiah, where he accidentally walked outside of the Tchum because he was deeply involved in his learning, and then Rav Nachman said we can make a mechitza of people in order for him to be able to come back in. Here we don't have any of that. Here we just have he deliberately walked beyond the 2,000 amas. Afilu ama achas. So even if he went one amma outside the tchum, lo yukonis, he's not allowed to go back in. He has four ammas. The point is, since he went, there's two ways of understanding it. We learned earlier in the perek, we had a machloikus about the question of havlos tchumin. Do we ever say that because one tchum overlaps, the new tchum that a person has overlaps with his old tchum, does that mean that he's able to go back into his old tchum? We had a machloikus in connection with a person who went out for Dvar Mitzvah, and then they told him on the way, the thing's already been accomplished, you don't need to go there. So we had a machloikus Rabba and Rav Shimi Bar Chiya, whether we say that the fact that if his new tchum of where he is now, where the Chachamim granted him a new tchum of 2,000 from where he's located right now, if that overlaps with the old one, is he able to go all the way back home, does he maybe have a double tchum now, etc. So we talk about that concept of havlos tchumin. So one way of understanding it over here is that when he went out b'mezid, we don't say this matter of havlos tchumin. So even though he has four amas around him in whatever direction he wants, and he's only one amma outside the tchum, so shouldn't we say then he has his four amas, and then once he goes four amas in the direction of the city, he's back within 2,000 amas, and he should be able to go home? No, we would say, b'mezid, that doesn't apply. The other way of understanding it, which is how the Rambam seems to say, and the Magen Mishnah understands the Rambam this way, is We learned a few days ago the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, who says that when he has four amas, it means he has to pick a certain direction where he has four amas, and then he only has four amas in that direction and no other. So what we would consider in this case, since he was walking away from the city, then we consider his four amas are in the direction, are continuing in the direction that he was going, meaning that his four amas are away from the city, and therefore there's no overlap at all between it and his original 2,000 amas. So therefore he's not allowed to go back in. Rabbi Eliezer, I'm a shtayim ikonis, shalosh lo ikonis. Rabbi Eliezer says, no, if he went out two amos, then he's able to go back in, because then you have avlos tchumen. Rabbi Eliezer learned before, we said that Rabbi Eliezer had held that the person's four amos is two amos on every side of him. So therefore, his two amos overlap a little bit with the 2,000 amos, because he's less than, as Gemara was going to say, he's a little bit less than two amos away from the city. Sholish, lo yikonis, but if he's already three or 2 point whatever amos outside, then he can't go back in, because then there's no overlap over there. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Chanina, raglay achas v'secha tchum v'raglay achas chutz l'tchum. What happens if he has 1 foot within the tchum and 1 foot outside it? Lo yikonis, Rav Chanina says he's still not allowed to go in. He's not allowed, even though he only has 1 foot out, he's not allowed to bring that foot back into the tchum. Dichtiv, im toshiv mishabas raglecha, because the pasuk says, if you hold back your foot, and the word raglecha is in the singular, if you hold back your foot from Shabbos, raglecha ksiv, the pasuk says raglecha, your foot, so even he only has 1 foot outside the tchum, he can't bring it back in. The Gemara says, what do you mean? V'hatanya ragla achas b'secha tchum, v'ragla achas chutz l'tchum yikonis. We learn in a braisa that he could come back in that scenario, if he has 1 foot in and 1 foot out. The answer is Homani Acherim. The answer is that price it would be according to Acherim. Acherim usually means Reb Meir. The Tanya Acherim, in the Mokum Shiruboy, who Nizker. Acherim say that you go Nizker means like he gets placed in the area where most of his body is. If he only has 1 foot outside the Tchum, most of his body is still within the Tchum. Therefore, he can go back in. So Acherim would hold that, but Rav Chanina, implicitly the other Tanoim disagree with it. So Rav Chanina is going according to the other Tanoim. Ikadamri, another version of the discussion is like this. Amar Rav Chanina, raglay achas b'secha tchum v'raglay achas chutz l'tchum yikonis. If the second version is the other way around. Rav Chanina says that if he has one leg inside the tchum and one leg outside the tchum yikonis, he can come back in. Dichtiv, im toshiv v'shabas raglecha, the same pasuk that says if you hold back your foot from not walking where you shouldn't on Shabbos, but the point is, it's true the word is written raglecha without the yud, but raglecha karinan, but we read it, the word raglecha, the lamed has a segel, so we can read it like the word raglecha with a yud after the segel, which would be a plural, which means your feet, so only if both his feet are outside the tchum would there be a problem, but not if there's only one. So the question is, V'hatanya lo yikonis, we learn a braisa that says that he can't. The answer is, Huda amaka acherim. The answer is, Rav Chanina is saying like acherim. The tanya, l'mokum shirubo, yu nizker, because again, in the acherim say that you go according to where the majority of his body is. So that is the halacha, and in fact, actually, when the Alter Rebbe mentions this halacha, he points out that that's the idea. In other words, that we're going according to where the majority of his body is. Which the Alter Rebbe doesn't elaborate, but other Achronim talk about, I think the Mishnah Berurah talks about, the implication might be, now you can have, obviously, when you have 1 foot in and 1 foot out, you could have the other way around. You could have, you're mostly balancing your weight on the 1 foot which is out, and you only have 1 foot, you still have 1 foot inside the tchum. Maybe in that case you can't go back in, because if the whole point is, based on where most of your body is, in that particular scenario where you're balancing on the foot outside the tchum, then most of your body is outside the tchum. Although there are some Achronim who say that maybe once the Chachamim said, once Acherim say, and the halacha is that if you have 1 foot in and 1 foot out, then you're allowed to, then we say that applies in all cases, even in this particular case, most of your body is outside. Okay. But the bottom line is, if you have 1 foot in and 1 foot out, depending, then you may be able to come back in the end, we're saying. We said Rabbi Eliezer, I'm a shtayim yikonis, sholosh lo yikonis. Rabbi Eliezer had said that if you're only two amos outside the tchum, you're allowed to come back in. But if you're three amos out, you're not. So the question is, Vahatanya Rabbi Eliezer, I'm achas, you can't shine like on this. In a braiser, Rabbi Eliezer says you're allowed to come back in if you're one amma out, but not if you're two ammas out. The answer is, like Kasha, hada oka chada v'kamatardi. When we say one versus two, we mean that he's left one whole amma and is in the middle of the second amma. So he's more than one amma, but less than two ammas away from the edge of the tum. So then we're saying he's able to go back in. Hada oker tarti v'kamatlas. The other one means where he left two amas and is standing in the third. So in our Mishnah, when it says two versus three, it means within the second amma versus within the third amma. And in the Braisa, it means that he's more than one amma and more than two amas away respectively. So the Mishnah and the Braisa are saying the same thing. Okay, the question though is, we learn in a braisa though that Rabbi Eliezer says that even if he only went out one amma, he's not able to go in. Well, actually, he doesn't say he went out. The braisa just says, even one amma, he's not able to come in. The answer is kitanya hivu moided. The answer is that braisa is talking about a different kind of case. That braisa is talking about the case of a person measuring. Meaning, Rashi says, we learned earlier in the perek, you have the scenario where a person is out of the is more than 2,000 amas away from the city before Shabbos. He doesn't know any landmark in the area that he can use as his makom shvisa, or he doesn't know the halacha that he's able to make a makom shvisa elsewhere. So he says, shvisasi b'makomi, I want my makom shvisa to be exactly where I am now. And we said, therefore, he has 2,000 amas. And since, of course, he doesn't have a measuring tape with him, we said, how does he measure 2,000 amas? He just walks 2,000 average size steps, we said at the beginning of the parak, and that is his Tum Shabbos. So what happens? So there we say that even one amma makes a difference. Ditnan, we learn in the next parak, ulamoded sha'amu, when it comes to measuring, when we say that a person is measuring the 2,000 ammas, and the Chachamim said about that, where we said sha'amu noisin le'apayim amma, we say we allot him 2,000 ammas, afilu seif midase kolab ma'ara, the din is that even if that 2,000 ammas ends exactly, let's say, in the middle of a cave, he's not allowed to go beyond 2,000 ammas. Because once he walked, he has the 4 amas of his makom shvisa, then he has the 2,000 amas beyond that. Now, if the cave or whatever enclosed area was all within his 2,000 amas, we would consider it as if it was 4 amas, and then we could measure beyond it. But because it's not completely within his 2,000 amas, part of it is in, part of it is out, then he can only walk that far into the cave, and that's it. So in other words, and also in Shulchan Aruch, it points out by the same logic. Well, actually, that's more as far as the next Mishnah. The next Mishnah mentions that if he's even one amma outside the tchum, then he can't come into the city. So what it would mean to be exact, it means he can go 3 ammas into the city, but no more than that. So the same thing over here, Rabbi Eliezer, when he says that he can't go in even one amma, it's not talking about the case like we said over here where he walked outside the tchum, because we said in the Mishnah Rabbi Eliezer is allowing him to go back in as long as he's less than 2 amas away. What we mean is, when he's measuring out his 2,000 amas, then he has to stop exactly at 2,000 amas, or 2,004 to be exact, because he has 4 amas makom shvisa. But he has to stop over there, even if he happens to be in the middle of a cave or whatever kind of enclosed area, he can't go in even one more, he can't go in even one more amma than that. The Mishnah says, Misha Hechsha Chutzlatchum, if it got dark for a person, as Shabbos began, and he's outside the Tchum, Afilo Amma Achas, even if he's one Amma outside the Tchum, Lo Yikonis, he can't go in. Now, when we say he can't go in, he's only one Amma outside the Tchum. In other words, he's 2,001 Ammas away from the edge of the city. So when we say he can't go in, doesn't literally mean, again, we said he has 4 Ammas, Makom Shvisa. So what it means is he can't become like a person of the city. Where he'll have the tum of the city. He is able to actually walk to the city, and which gets him then, the 2,000 amas gets him one amma outside the city. He has the makom shvisa, he had 4 amas to begin with, so he has another 4 amas he can go, so he can go one amma plus another 3 amas into the city, and then he has to stop there. Rav Shimon Omer, Afilu Chamesh Esri Amos Yikonis. Rav Shimon says, no, even if he was as much as 15 Amos outside the Tchum, he can still come back in. She'enem Ashoichas Mematzenes Amidos, because the people who measure the Tchumim do not measure them so precisely. Now, what they did in those days is when they measured the tomb of a city, they would actually put markers, they would put boundary markers, 2,000 amas away from the city, wherever the surveyors found that the 2,000 amas were, as we're going to learn in the next paragraph, how exactly they did the surveying. So they would place a marker over there. So the Shimon is saying they don't exactly place the marker at the 2,000 amma point. They put it a little further in, because of people who make a mistake. Rashi has two explanations what that means. One is that sometimes you have people are walking outside the city. They don't pay attention to the tomb marker. They may accidentally go beyond it a little bit. So Rav Shimon says, in order to accommodate such people, they vidavka don't put the markers right at the end. That way, if a person is a little bit fartift or whatever, then they're going to go, they're going to look back at some point and realize, hey, I just passed the marker, but I'm still fairly close to it, and therefore know that they're actually still within the tomb. That's one explanation. Then Rashi, so according to that, it comes out, it's not Dafka 15 Amos. Reb Shimon is just mentioning 15 Amos as a nice round number, but it could be even more or less than that. The Tosfos Yom Tov says that maybe what it would be is, in other words, it would depend on the terrain. We're talking about whether it's flat land or whether it's hills and valleys or whatever, might depend because, in other words, the surveyors would have to consider, according to that, how likely is it that a person is going to go beyond the tomb marker without realizing it? If it's flat land, let's say, and there's no landmarks, then maybe you would say a person is likely to walk further before they realize I went too far. Whereas if it was mountains and valleys, then maybe less. Rashi has a second explanation. Rashi also Rabbeinu Yohanan have a second explanation that the 15 amos is davka. We're going to learn in the next perek that the way they measure the tomb is using a rope of 50 amos long. They measure 50 amos with the rope, and then they move to the next spot and do the next 50 amos and so forth. Now, what happens is, expert measurers know to be able to subtract when they're measuring. The fact is, there's a certain part of the rope that they're holding on to, so they know to subtract that each time, so they're actually not measuring 50 amos, they're measuring 49 and a little bit, and they know to add that back in at the end. But what happens is sometimes you have, if they're holding onto the rope, each one holds, Rashi says, a tefach plus a half an etzba. So you figure it out then. They have to do this 40 times, because 50 ropes times 40 equals 2,000 amas. So altogether, then they wind up with 80. So they don't realize that they have to subtract that part. The toyim, according to that, would be the actual measurers themselves, that they don't realize that they need to factor that in. So they wind up subtracting by mistake a tefach plus a half an etzba for each measurement. At each end, so two tfachim and one etzba per measurement, times 40 equals 80 tfachim plus 40 etzbois. There are four etzbois in a tefach, so that gives us another 10 tfachim. So we wind up with 90 tfachim, which equals 15 amas. So according to that, the 15 amas is bedavka because you have the measurers are not always so accurate. And the Gemara says, Tonim, if they tell you Hamida, so we learn in a Braisa that what he means is because you have people who make a mistake with the measure. So according to Rashi's first explanation, it means people who walk too far beyond the tomb measurement without realizing that they did, and then they catch themselves. So then for their sake, Reb Shimon is allowing up to 15 amos, or as we said, maybe not exactly 15 amos, maybe a little more or less. And according to the second explanation of Rashi, it means the measurers themselves sometimes make a mistake and measure the tomb too short by forgetting to factor in the amount of the rope that they're actually holding in their hands. Hadron Aloch Misha Itziyuhu. So now the subject of this next perek, we'll start on it a little bit. The subject of this next perek is how we measure tchumim of cities. Basically, we're going to be dealing with a couple of issues. Number one is how we determine the boundaries of the city itself, and number two is how we determine the boundary of the tchumim. And then towards the end of the parak, we're also going to talk about the case where you want to make an eruv for the entire where you want to make an eruv for the entire city. What the rules are about that. So the Mishnah starts off. Ketzed ma'abrin asa'arim. How do you make an ibur for the city? We're going to see in the Gemara there's two different ways of understanding the word ma'abrin. Is it ma'abrin with an ayin, and therefore it's maloshin isha ubra? It's related to the word a pregnant woman, because like what we're doing is we're extending the city out as if it was pregnant. Or the other possibility, the Gemara says it's ma'abrin with an aleph, which means as if we're adding an aver, as if we're adding limbs to the city. So how do we do that? So like this. Bayis nichnas bayis yoytze. Suppose you have at the edge of the city, you have houses sticking out, or houses that are indented. So the edge of the city is not a straight line. Or pogum nichnas pogum yoytze. Or you have a pogum, which is a tower that sticks out of the wall. Rashi describes it's a round tower that sticks out of the wall. Sometimes these towers stick out, and you have a round turret sticking out of the wall. Sometimes the other way around, sometimes you have them indented into the wall. Or hoyisham gdudius gvoyas. The basic idea is, what we want is, after we measure out the city, we want the shape of the city to be a square or a rectangle. We want that each of the four angles of the city should be a right angle. So in this case, for example, so the Mishnah is going to end up saying, so if we have these things sticking out, what we do is we draw the line in order to include those, and therefore we include, so that we end up including a certain amount of empty space which is not actually built up, because you have a house sticks out on one corner or on one side of the city. Also, hoyushem gedudius gevoyas asaratochim. Also, if you have there ruined houses where the remaining walls are at least 10 tefachim tall. And as Rashi points out, they're close enough to the city, within 70 and two-thirds amas, as we're going to say later on in the perek. Ugshorim, or if you have bridges that are close to the city, unefoshes, or you have tombs, like mausoleums, like a building over a caver, sheyesh behen beis dira, where somebody lives in them. Tosfos explains that's referring to the bridges, that, in other words, a bridge by itself wouldn't be considered a makam dira in order to draw the tomb around it, unless it had, let's say, for example, you have kind of like a toll booth over there where the toll taker lives over there, or the person in charge of maintenance of the bridge or whatever. As far as the nefashis, as far as the tombs, Tosfos says you don't even need anybody to be living over there. So in all those cases, we draw out the measurement opposite them, meaning, in other words, Rashi describes, let's say, for example, so you have on the northeast corner of the city, you have one of these things sticking out beyond the rest of the city. We measure the line as if there was another one on the southwestern corner sticking out just as far, and we draw a line from one to the other so we end up including that house, and we also end up including a whole lot of empty space going down to the opposite corner of the city, to the next corner of the city on that side. We make the city's boundaries into like a square board. And the point of that is, Kadeshi Niskur, as obvious, you gain from that by having the city itself squared off, and also the tum is squared off, as we learned in the previous parak. Then the result is that you gain the corners as well. If, let's say, for example, Rashi describes, let's say the city, after we account for all these houses and whatever that stick out, let's say we came out with an exact square, if then we measure the tchum of 2,000 amas around it on each side, it winds up, when we look at the corners, we gain an extra 800 amas or so on each corner. Because the diagonal of a square, 2,000 by 2,000, is about 2,800. So you gain another 800 amas going in each corner from the city by doing that. And then on top of that, again, there's whatever areas that we add in by factoring in the buildings that stick out and whatever. So the Gemara starts off, Rabu Shmuel, chad toni me'abrin with an ayin, v'chad toni me'abrin with an aleph. One says that the word in our Mishnah is me'abrin with an ayin, the other one says me'abrin with an aleph. Manda toni me'abrin, the one who says that the word is me'abrin with an aleph, he says aver. It means it's as if like we're adding limbs to the city. Because you have a limb that sticks out on one corner, and you're drawing the line all the way to the other corner, then it's as if like you added a limb to the city. If you say ma'abrin with an ayin, then it means you're considering it like a pregnant woman where you're adding something extra, where she has something extra added to her. The Toras Chaim points out, actually, what an actual naftamina between them might be. Let's say you only have temporary huts that are near the city. If we say it's Meloshon Aver, and Aver is something permanently attached to the body, so maybe those huts wouldn't count. If we say it's Meloshon Keisha Obra, a pregnancy is only a temporary thing, so here also these temporary buildings might be good enough. The Rebbe points out in a footnote to a Sicha, that here in the Gemara, it doesn't specify which one said which. It just says Rav and Shmuel. One says Ma'abrin with an Ayin, one says Ma'abrin with an Aleph. But in the Yerushalmi, it actually specifies which one says which. But it actually lists them the other way around. Ma'abrin with an Aleph, then Ma'abrin with an Ayin. So that it comes out that Rav is the one who says Ma'abrin with an Aleph, and Shmuel is the one who says Ma'abrin with an Ayin. Similar machlokesin we have in other contexts. We say ma'oras ha-machbela. Why is it called ma'oras ha-machbela? Again, Rav Shmuel, chad omer shnei batim zelifnim mizeh. One says that it means there were two houses or two rooms, one within the other. And Rashi shows a diagram over here that you have an outer chamber and then you have an inner chamber. V'chad omer b'yisval li'agab. But the other one says it means it was a two-story house. You have a ground floor and then you have a floor and then you have a floor above it. And nowadays, of course, when we go to the Ma'oras HaMachpela, we don't see any of that. We have the building that was built over it, and you have the various places which are marked as the grave of the cave of Abraham, the cave of Sarah, and so forth. Those were all put up by the Arabs long after that those are in the exact places they should be. But in the original cave, it was either, as we're saying, either one inside the other or one on top of the other. So the Moses Bishlem Lamando Amazal Gabzeh Haine Machpela. I can understand if it's one on top of the other, then it makes sense to call it Machpela. It's a double cave. Ella Lamando Amas Shnei Batim Zelef Nimizeh. But if you say it's two houses, one inside the other, that's not really Kfula. It's not really doubled. So my Machpela, then why is it called Machpela? And the answer is Kfula Bezugas. According to that, we would say because it's doubled in that it has pairs of people buried over there. You have Adam and Chava, Avraham and Sarah, Yitzchak and Rivka, and Yaakov and Leah. So it's Kfula in that you have four pairs of people buried over there. In fact, Marashah says, based on that, once we say that, we don't even really need to say anymore that the Machlokas is originally what the word Machpela means. It just means Rav and Shmuel are arguing what the actual shape of it was. Each one learned from his Rebbe what the actual shape of it was, and when we're associating it with the word Machpela. The Pasuk calls the place Mamre Kiryas Arba. So what's Kiryas Arba? Amrev Yitzchak Kiryas Ha'arba Zugis. It means it's the city of the four pairs of people. Adam B'chava, Avraham B'sara, Yitzchak B'rifka, Yaakov V'leah. Marshall explains, you have a pasuk that calls it Mamre Kiryas Ha'arba. If it just said Mamre Kiryas Arba, you could say maybe Arba is the name of a person. Kiryas Arba would mean the city where Arba lived. In fact, the Medrash says that there was a giant who lived in that area called Arba, and the city might have been named after him. When it says Mamre Kiryas Ha'arba, you don't usually put a hey before a person's name, so therefore it indicates that it has to do with the four pairs of people who were buried in that cave, as we're saying over here. Another one, Vayhibi Me Amrothel, similar machlokes. It says it was in the days of Amrothel. You had the war of the four kings against the five. So Rav Shmuel, Chadom and Nimrod Shmoy. So Rav and Shmuel argue. One say that his real name was Nimrod. The Lama Nikra Shmoy Amrothel. So why in this pasuk is he called Amrothel? Sha'omar Vihipil Avram Avinu B'Seich Kivshan Eish. Because he said he ordered and threw Avraham into the fiery furnace. So therefore, in here, in the pasuk, it calls him Amrothel. V'chadomer Amrothel Shmo. The other one says his real name is Amrothel. V'lama Nikashma Nimrod. So why is his name? Why are we calling him Nimrod? Shehimrod is kolay olaf machosay, because he caused the whole world to rebel against him, which is a nice way of saying to rebel against Hashem in his kingship. Here also, by the way, with these two machlokas, and the Toras Chaim points out practical implications of them in halacha. As far as the first one, as far as Machpela, if a person says, I'm going to sell you a cave that or a house, which is Machpela, does it have to be one on top of the other, or does it have to be one inside the other? And as far as the Amrothel and Nimrod thing, one thing would be, for example, are you allowed to call a child by one of these names? We know you're not allowed to name after a Rosha. If his real name was Nimrod, then you're not allowed to use the name Nimrod, but you could, if you wanted, use the name Amrothel, because we're saying over here that that was only a nickname for him. If you say that his real name was Amrafel, then it would be the other way around. You have nowadays, it's somewhat common among Israelis that they are somewhat common, but whatever. There is a name that they use in Israel, Nimrod. I've never heard of anybody calling their kid Amrafel, but I have. There are Israelis who call their kids Nimrod. I actually read about one such kid who became a Baal Tshuva and went to ask a Shaila, should he maybe change his name? And the Rav told him, Adarabba, keep it, let people see that even a Nimrod can be a Baal Tshuva, can be a Fruma Yid. With these couple of machlokes in, and also the next one, which we'll leave for tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, there's a sicha in Chelek Tesdayin where the Rebbe analyzes these machlokes in and a number of others, and says the vote is, in general, with these machlokes in of Rav and Shmuel, with each one, Rav looks primarily at the meaning of the word itself, even if the context might require something else, and Shmuel looks more at the context to see the meaning of it. So, for example, as far as Amrafel and Nimrod, so Rav takes the view that, look, in the list of the descendants of Noach, that's in Parshas Noach, it mentions Nimrod over there. It says Chush Yola, that's Nimrod. But Pashtos, the name Nimrod doesn't have any special meaning any more than any of the other names there. So it's more likely that Nimrod was the name they gave him when he was first born, or at his bris, or whatever they had in the whatever naming ceremony they had in those days. And then later on, when the Pasuk is mentioning the war against Zdoim, which Avraham was involved in, then it calls him Nimrod in order to stress that he was doing it as a rebellion against Hashem because he wanted to capture Avraham, etc. As opposed to Shmuel takes the view that, look, I mean, right there in Parshas Noach, you have the whole context over there where it continues, etc., where it describes his actions, and therefore it's more likely to say that the word Nimrod over there is actually meant as a title, as a nickname, because of what he accomplished, that he caused the world to rebel against Hashem, whereas meanwhile, later on, in Parshas Lech Lecha, it just gives his actual name, Amrafel, and so forth with the other Machloikasin as well. To be continued tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. Shkoyach.